Hi, this is Frank Cifuentes. I finally got up enough nerve to record another story. This story is called Canicas con Stella by Starlight. Canicas meant being in love, whether it be puppy love or madly in love. And the one thing that's missing with this story is little music in the background. Music, the recording of Stella by Starlight. I can just hear it now. It was in 1950, and I was early 1950. I was 17. It was going to be 18, the 18th of May. And although I didn't know how to appreciate it, my life was working very well after the ravages of adolescence. The year before, I had won first place in the Texas Optimist Club Oratorical Contest. Our topic was youth looks forward to civic responsibility. The prizes I had won were a gold Elgin watch, 12-day trip to California to compete in the national convention in San Francisco. When the Optimist Club found out that I was a genuinely poor Mexican boy, they bought me a suit, a real sporty one at JCPenney's with some slacks. And when they saw my teeth were tarnished from lack of proper dental care, they arranged to have my teeth cleaned. By 1950, I had caught up with the glamour of wearing my pressure suit and my brother Ben's nice dress clothes. He was attending University of Texas and had a nice wardrobe. And poor brother had the misfortune of being my exact size. 1950 became a vintage year for me in the romance department, especially after I met Stella Contreras, who was a classic Clara Morena, con lunar cerca la boca y todo, a dark-haired woman with fair skin and a beauty mark close to her mouth and everything else. In my eyes, she was a combination of Linda Darnell and Maria Felix. Stella had a kind of exotic beauty that came to Austin from time to time from one of the surrounding small towns. What made them more attractive is that they left their ever-protecting fathers, brothers, and jealous boyfriends behind. I was a lucky guy to be at the right place at the right time when Stella came to stay with her Aunt Connie in La Vecindad de Santa Rita. Connie was a beautician and one of the most lovely ladies in the entire East Side, and Stella came to learn how to become a beautician from her. Connie had, of course, applied all her knowledge and skills of her trade to make Stella look lovely as a dream. It was clearly a case of natural beauty, fully enhanced by Connie's art. Just like in the script in which a couple fall in love in the first sight, Stella lavished her attention on me with her dark black sparkling eyes looking deeply into mine and her perfect smiling lips, making me feel like one of the most important, charming, and interesting young men in the world. Stella and I started meeting in front of Mac Martinez's house, which is one of the tiny few liberated spots in Austin, because the Martinez family were affectionate, warm, friendly, modern, and open-minded, which is to say that they let boys come to their house to visit their daughters. Stella and I would stand face to face, holding hands and occasionally embrace. And at times I was able to steal a kiss, the kind of sweet kisses mother give their babies, which were enough to make my heart reel with joy. The only formal date I had with Stella was Valentine's Day, when I invited her to go to the Paramount Theater in a cab. The ultimate romantic date in those times. But before we could go to the movies, we had to stop by the panaderia of Rudy Martinez, who was acting as Stella's surrogate father during her stay in Austin. He was a friend of the family. Rudy made it clear that Stella was the kind of lady to be respected, then told me to bring her back by 8:30 p.m. to the panaderia so that then he could take her home. So away we went in the cab, holding hands, snuggling up close, embracing and laughing, with Cupid riding shotgun. We got off in the front of the theater like a glamorous Hollywood couple attending the Academy Award. We naturally sat in the very back row and got lost under the spell of romance. By the time the oil mill bus got us back to Rudy's panaderia, we were at least an hour and a half late. And when we walked in, Rudy violently broke our bubble. He lashed out at me verbally like a man holding himself back from giving me a thrashing. For how dare I bring Stella back so late and force him to wait? Didn't I have any idea of the meaning of keeping my word? Of course, that was the real problem. Rudy was not too much older than Stella, but he was a respected businessman, and he took the role of Stella's surrogate father seriously. To this day, I suspect part of his rage was caused by jealousy over seeing me so happy with the super lovely Stella, while all the time that we were gone, he had been slaving away making pan dulce. A couple of days later, I learned Stella had returned to her hometown, and I had become a forlorn lover. No one could explain why she left, so I talked to my friend David Banda, who had a motorcycle, talked him into taking me to Victoria, where Stella lived. The trip, though, was a total failure. I did find her house and asked for her, but they told me that she wasn't home, and I always had the feeling after that she was home, but she didn't want to see me. Stella later returned to her Aunt Connie's, but everything had changed. I found out that she had decided to be Mike Ramirez's steady girlfriend, which was a blow to my ego, but Mike had been a friend since the first grade. I could not resent him. Besides, he had more to offer her. Like Stella, he had already graduated from high school and was working. And as luck would have it, Cupid had other plans for me. Just as I found out that I had lost Stella by starlight forever to Mike, I had fallen madly in love with La Divina, but that's another story. Tiriri tirilo, este cuento ya se acabó.